Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
Really good. Crushing it.
Excellent.
Succeeding at life.
Super happy to hear it.
Yeah, doing really well. I went to a football game this weekend.
Me too.
The same football
Different game. Different capacity, but yeah, me too.
And at that football game, the Ducks won 69-3. That was fun.
What's crazy is that though the other team only scored 3 points, their quarterback did throw 2 touchdown passes on back-to-back plays.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Just to us.
Yeah. There was back-to-back pick sixes. It was a pretty decisive beatdown.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to call that what it is, which is to say a butt-whipping. It's rough. I think if you're Oklahoma State, you know, it doesn't help that Gundy kind of...
talked a little shit.
I don't know if he was shit-talking. I think he just kind of put his foot in his mouth a couple times before, you know, in the lead-up. And
I think he was priming, he was creating the reason for his loss. He was like, yeah, we're going to lose, and here's why. Or if we lose, here's why.
Yeah, I think if you're Gundy, right, you're feeling that frustration. You're like, how am I supposed to compete with Oregon when I have so much less money on the table? And you know, that's tough. We're obviously incredibly fortunate in Oregon to have a school with a big NIL capacity. You know, we've got the resources to be able to go after the top talent, you know, probably one of about 15 schools in the country that legitimately have that top tier NIL. So that's, I feel fortunate. And I think Oklahoma State right now appears to be one of the losers in this deal. But you know, it's not like they have they've got a 20-year legacy of relative success. So I think Gundy's feeling frustrated, and that makes sense. I can understand what he's saying, but it just was kind of bad timing. You know, you're going to go, Dan Lanning's known for the sound bite. He's known, like, let's save it for another week or maybe afterwards.
Yeah. And coming into Autzen is a new experience for teams that have never played at Autzen. It, like, just that in and of itself is a thing.
Yeah, they do a good, you know, Autzen's known for being noisy, and it's noisy.
It is thunderous.
It's noisy, yeah. It's a fun place to be a football fan, I would say, for my part.
It is. It's a fun stadium to watch a football game at. It's not a big stadium, right? You know, it's not.
Yeah, 52,000 capacity?
Something like that,
yeah. Thereabouts, yeah. Which is roughly half of what Ann Arbor is or you know, Ohio State, right?
Yeah, it was a proper smackdown. The Goodyear blimp was present.
That was cool. I don't think I've had that experience before.
I haven't ever seen the Goodyear blimp either.
I know I've seen it before, but I don't think I've ever seen it at a Ducks football game. So yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool. I don't really know, like, where does the, like, who's making the Goodyear blimp decisions?
I am unsure about that too. I'm sure it's on the internet. I did learn that they don't transport it by air or rail or truck. They fly that bitch from like one location to the next.
It just, everywhere it goes, it flies.
It's like putters along.
Yeah. Well, it's so big, right?
And it's so slow.
Yeah.
Because it's a blimp.
Yeah. I suppose it probably doesn't go very far in a day.
No, I can't imagine it does. But yeah, that was cool. One of my coworkers said that his high school age daughter saw it in the distance and was concerned it was a spaceship because she was unfamiliar with blimps.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't even know, like, when did the Goodyear blimp become a thing? I don't know. It's always been a thing in my life.
Yeah,
as long as I can remember.
As long as I can remember, it's been like a sporting event thing. Like, you see the Goodyear blimp at big football games and at NASCAR races, and that's it. Yeah, that's where you see the Goodyear blimp. I don't know where else you see it.
In that Ice Cube song.
In the garage, I guess. I don't know.
Andrew, how are you?
I'm also good. I am on vacation this week because my wife is at a work conference. So I'm just hanging out at the house. My kids call when mom is away. They call it boy ride.
I love that.
Yesterday morning, I started on a brisket for today. I also made brisket hot dogs. They are still chilling, but I've had one of them, and they are good. They are good hot dogs. But I finished my brisket, so tonight we had brisket and baked potatoes for dinner and watched movies, and life was just chill.
Love that.
Boy ride is always chill.
Boy ride. That's fun. Mm-hmm. That's fun. You live in a boy house. I also kind of live in a boy house, but with
some disruptions.
A higher relative population of women.
Double.
And just a higher.
Precisely. Double.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't feel like we have as much power in that context.
No, you're insufficiently powered against two women.
Andrew, not another thing, but we are drinking High West Distilleries Midwinter Nights Dram. Midwinter Nights Dram. High West being out of Park City, Utah. A pretty cool distillery, and they make some pretty cool whiskeys. This is an annual release of straight rye bourbons that have been aged in port barrels. Port being that, fortified dessert wine.
Raisin wine, yeah.
So you get it's rye and it's spicy and it's strong, but you also get this
vanilla ice cream.
Vanilla ice cream, yeah. This feels very much like a Christmas whiskey to me. Mm. Like this would be very nice on December 24th.
That's probably why it's named what it's named.
Yeah, well, I think Midwinter Night. Yeah. No, you're probably right. Anyway.
Even though that's early winter.
It's delicious all of the time, but specifically, I wanted it tonight. I just haven't had much of it, and I thought let's have a dram or two.
Let's have a little splash
of Midwinter Night's dram.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's got a big port finish. These come out in let's see. So this is Act 12, Scene 7. I think that means I don't know what that means. I thought I had it, and then I changed my mind. I don't want to say what I think. So, yeah. This is Act 12, Scene 7. In any event, if you track these things, and that's what we're drinking tonight. Amongst other things, I think you cracked a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
I did.
Which is never a bad decision. It's one of my favorites.
No, it's so easy drinking. But, beyond, football and booze and meats.
Yeah, we got to talk about watches.
We have some watches to talk about.
We're here
about.
To talk about watches. You're right, Andrew, and that's my fault for... That's my fault.
Usually,
for not getting
you're the one who gets the ball rolling on this.
I know.
I'm deeply disappointed in your inaction.
this was a weird week too, because we had Geneva Watch Days. It had just it was about to start when we met last week. It was about to start, but I think we had sort of seen some of the early returns. And we are now fully through Geneva Watch Days. And I'm just going to say there are about 10,000 really, really cool watches that came out this week that we're not going to talk about because it's just not our thing. I don't know how to talk about some of these watches. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but it's cool.
I like the way it looks, and that's as much as I understand.
If you're much more into horology, high-end horology, than we are, I'll just say there's some really cool shit. Now, we are going to talk about some watches today that are very expensive, unobtainium, I would say. We're going to talk about some watches that are also very cool and obtainable.
And obtainium.
Obtainium. Obtainium. And we're just going to talk about the watches that came out this week that maybe don't have anything to do with Geneva Watch Days, but were released at the same time and are really cool. We have a lot of watches, I think. I didn't do a count here.
We're not going to get to all of them, so it's best you don't. Because then we're going to under-deliver. We're talking about 17 things, and we'll get to three.
Why don't you start us off? Let's Let's see if we can start with the things that we don't have overlap on, if that's at all possible.
I'm going to start with the thing I want to start with.
All right.
Remember a few weeks ago when Doxa released what is perhaps their best model? And we were like, man, why is it a special edition?
No, that's not what we said. We said, this is going to be a regular edition soon.
We hope it is. And it is. Yeah. The Doxa Sub 750T is now released in all of the signature colors from Doxa. But, and this is my favorite part, it's not the glossy ones. It's just the matte, regular colors. And that is terrific. Because I do think you're right. I think this is the best case that Doxa has in their stable. I'm not fully sold on a 45 millimeter case, but coming in at under 12 millimeters thick, I'm okay with it. I bet it wears very similarly to the 300T. Even though it's 2.5 millimeters wider, it's 2 millimeters thinner.
Mm, yeah, I don't think it wears like, I can't imagine it wears anything like the 300T. This watch is really an enigma. How thick is the 300 Professional? It's over 12, isn't it?
The 300 is, they're both, the 300 is 13.4 and the 300T is 13.6.
So essentially, we've got a watch that's obviously a bit wider. So yeah, the 300 is 42 and a half. So obviously 45 it's much wider, you know, because of the way geometry works. If you add a little bit, you add a lot, right?
Yeah.
I think that's enough. Okay. Way to say that.
I don't.
2 millimeters isn't just 2 millimeters. It's a lot, right? This is a big fucking watch.
Geometry works.
That's the way, because that's how geometry works. So I, long story short, you might not want a 45 millimeter watch. And if so, then you go look at the 300 or you look at the 300T, whichever you like better. But I think because of the thinness, you know, this watch is just going to wear incredibly well.
It is.
You know, like my AMW 320 is, I think, a 44 millimeter watch. It's a big motherfucker, but it's...
I think the AMW is even bigger than that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's 45 or 44 and change. But because of the thinness, because it's so thin, because it's a quartz watch, it just wears super duper well. It phenomenal. I put it on my wrist and I'm like, yeah, I love this thing. Or that Timex Intrepid that came out this year, you know, same thing. We've got these watches that are really big, really wide, but because they're thin, they don't feel like big motherfuckers. Now, the old Doxa 750T was 44 or 45 millimeters, but it was also like 35 millimeters thick, right? So
yeah,
you put it on and it's just, not literally, but I think it was like 15 and a half or 16.
It's 44.
The 44 is the AMW 320, mm-hmm. Yeah. So big watch, right? But given the thinness, it just wears really nice. It lays. So I think if you're interested in a big watch, this is going to be big. And it's like that C case, right? So it's not, it's going to wear really nice, I think. I think this is, for me, the watch in the Doxa collection that I would be the most excited about owning.
I think we're going to get to see them next month.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. And it's not expensive either. I mean,
it's comparable to the 300 line.
This for me, I think that this is the, I don't want to say it's the most Doxa, because I think there's something about that porthole opening that you get on the 300T that is maybe, that really feels Doxa. But this to me feels like the best overall watch. Like if Jacques Cousteau were going to pick one.
Now, yeah.
I bet he picks this one.
Yeah, I agree.
Like big, wide, legible, tons of water resistance, thin, wearable. This is a fucking dope watch.
It is.
I think it's terrific. I'm really glad that we have this.
21 millimeter lug width, though.
Yeah, well, but why does it matter? If you ever, you just never put this on anything besides the borderline perfect bracelet the Doxa sells this on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just...
I hear you. I hear you. You're not wrong, but also you're not right.
Okay.
Feel fine about it.
Okay.
I couldn't tell. You were like, Do I want to? I don't know. Another watch that really cool, but for its lug width.
What's a but for?
Hamilton released a khaki aviation pilot Pioneer mechanical chronograph. That's what this watch is called. Let's just back up. The Hamilton khaki aviation pilot Pioneer mechanical chronograph.
And I hate Hamilton naming conventions.
Oh, come on.
And reference
That's
numbers.
Fun. Let's just use all the words. I do wonder, like, could they have skipped aviation or pilot? Like,
no, you need a full sentence for the name. It needs to be 5 to 7 words with a subject, a verb, and an object.
And why is this a okay? Okay, fine. I'm just gonna start by saying this is a watch that's previously been available in black. It's now available in blue. And that's the only thing that's happening here.
The blue is good, though.
The blue is good. I'm not going to make fun of it. I think this is fine. I like this release. I'm going to say, furthermore, this is a watch that has been on my radar. So this is a relatively faithful recreation of a RAF watch from the 70s. 60s? Shoot. 70s.
Yeah, I think 70s.
It's a 40-millimeter chronograph. Valjoux 7750 base. It's 14.3 thick, which is about right for this watch. It's got a big old box sapphire on the top of it, which gives it some of that dimension. 100 meters of water resistance. It's great. It's got a great, like what I would call sort of prototypical RAF dial. It's got like plunger pushers that are sort of recessed, pulled into the case in a pleasant way. It's got an asymmetric side that they achieved, that pulled in recessed plunger.
With a sort of like an almost crown guard, but not quite. It's more like a crown stem guard.
Really, really great watch. I think I would have this watch because they're affordable too. I mean, you can pick these up for under $2,000 all day long. I don't know about this one yet. You will be able to pick this one.
You know, though, I just don't like the new Hamilton logo on these watches, like on the
khaki auto. Hamilton,
yeah, logo. The current, like the
retro logo.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of this logo.
So the logo doesn't bother me, but
or
I think
the font
that's,
on the Hamilton.
That's a fair criticism. I like them both, but fair criticism. What I don't like about this watch, and the reason I think I will almost like never own this watch but for really enjoying it in most other respects, it's got 22 millimeter lugs, Andrew.
It does.
It's an instant no for me.
And it doesn't come on a bracelet.
It's a no for me, dog.
It doesn't come on a bracelet.
I'm okay with no bracelet because it's a RAF watch. It feels like this watch really should be on a...
It should be on leather. It should be on a nylon pass-through. It should be on a strap. Mm-hmm. But I want a bracelet option.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. Yeah. So for me, I probably wouldn't buy this because of the 22 millimeter lugs. It's just too big of an opening, I think. And you can tell, like I'm looking at this, just even looking at the pictures, like that lug width is, it's awkward. For me,
it looks like a converted pocket watch.
Why is that?
The strap is the same width as the dial.
You know, make that a little shorter, shorten up your lugs a little bit. Bring that length in a little bit. I think this is a much better watch. But as it is, I'll probably never own one of these.
They're also, you know, 2,300 euros.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine. Like, you can get these things. You can get the black one for under $2,000 regularly. So I think the price on these is great. And I think it's a terrific looking watch. I think it's a terrific watch, just as far as like how we rate these things, 7753 movement. I mean, this is a good watch, but that lug width bothers me. It felt appropriate to talk about that after your Doxa comment.
I accept. I do like the watch a lot. But
let's try to get to these. Let's power.
Okay. Okay. Next. HTD Aquatique MK2. This is a
Oris.
I was gonna say like NTH Oris. This is a 2017, 2018 micro brand watch. That's new. But when I looked at it and I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And then I looked at the case profile, and this thing is toit. Yeah. 11 and a half thick, 200 meters of water resistance on this 39.4 case. Whew. My interest is piqued. Yeah. Using a Miyota 9039 movement, 47 lug to lug, 20 millimeter lug width, and under $1,000, I kind of wanted to not like this watch when I saw it, which is why I like opened the article and read about it, looked at it, and I was like, it turns out I kind of do like this watch, even though it's like pulling design from 8 years ago, kind of at the very beginning, like the early days of micro watch, micro brand boom, you know, and doing it again. Top down, the case is perfectly boring. It's exactly what I want and like. The dial's really, really busy. Not a super fan of the fonts, but the thinness on it, this case profile, this perfect crown, I'm into it. I don't know anything about this brand. It's a Florence-based company that I've never heard of. And not Florence, Oregon. Florence, probably Italy. Yeah, I'm
guessing you're right about that.
I'm into it.
No, I think it's good. I think you're right. I don't know if I agree with all the timings of your criticisms, but I think your criticisms are fair nonetheless, right? It's sort of like the sum of it that's uninspired, right?
They've been there, done that design.
Yeah, yeah. With that said, I think they've done a really good job on the elements. You know, interesting choice to go with the scalloped bezel, being as how the scalloped bezel is well known to be like the least practical design of all time. But it's not just a scalloped bezel. From the top down, it appears to be a scalloped bezel. And then you get to the top and you realize that the scallops are reversed on the bottom side. So you get a sort of
like actual scalloping
wave pattern along the side of the bezel. That is interesting. And I like it. Handset is good. It's an attractive handset. But I think you're right on, Andrew, that really the key to this being a good watch is that just tip to tail, case and bracelet, everything looks super interesting and well done. Female end links on this thing, which is a great decision. I do really like the lug to end link transitions. I love the crystal that sits up on top of the bezel. Perfect use of a hi-hat. And I gotta say, I really am enamored by the font they used at 6 o'clock for the aquatic. I don't know what that font is, but it is terrific. I do know they call the watch the Aquatica, but then that font at 6 o'clock spells out just aquatic, which I thought, well, maybe that's they're making this for the American market. I don't know. I think it's really good, and I'm with you, Andrew, that this is a watch that it's almost like I don't think this should be good, but it just turns out to be really, really good.
Yeah, it almost in spite of itself.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about one of the I've got a couple expensive watches on here. I'm going to talk about the one that I saw this week, and I was just like, oh boy, what I wouldn't give. Turns out, even if I gave all the things, I wouldn't be able to afford it still. But that's okay, because this is just really, really tremendous as far as these things go. Gerald Genta is a guy who has designed watches for a long time.
Has he done anything noteworthy?
Nothing lately. Okay. That's maybe not a good joke. That was in poor form.
it was a little bit, but also accurate.
Obviously, creator of the pole router, creator of the Nautilus, you know, perhaps the most celebrated or at least the most well-known watch designer of all time. His eponymous brand, Gerald Genta, released a minute repeater watch at Geneva Watch Days that is, I don't know really what else to say besides,
it's okay.
Oh my God. So so the first thing you'll notice about this is a single lug design, which is something that Genta really sort of did a lot of later in his career with the Pasha de Cartier and the Creator locomotive. So he's a fan of that single lug design. I don't always love it, although here I am
in this application, it lands.
That's right. We've got a 40 millimeter 5N yellow gold case that's 9.6 thick.
Which is wild for a minute repeater.
Which is wild. And it's a minute repeater. This is the GG002, which is a manual winding minute repeater caliber with stainless steel hammers and gongs, manually tuned by ear and hand, affixed to the case to further boost sound projection with exceptionally clear and crystalline chime. They put together a world-class team of watch people to make this watch, and it is, I think, a triumph. Black Onyx dial, 3N yellow gold. I think this is perhaps, for me, this is subjective, one of the most gorgeous watches I've ever seen. The minute repeater pusher is barely projects from the case.
It almost isn't a pusher even.
I think that the models that they've put in this watch have been largely female, because I think that the watch is soft and feminine. It's almost oval case. And so I think that there's a certain feminine appeal to this.
With
that
said, and also a pure jewelry appeal.
The size of this thing is pure masculine. And I'm not saying a woman couldn't wear this watch. Of course they can. But I think this is a men's sized watch. And I think a proper wrist, this thing would look terrific on a proper wrist. Because one of the things I've noticed with the models that they've seen pictured in this watch is the watch pokes out too far. I think given enough wrist real estate, this watch would really sing. Now, nobody knows how much it cost.
No, because you have to request it.
But it is,
if you got to ask,
estimated to be no less than 300,000 Swiss francs. So probably about $400,000.
They're going to make 10 of them a year, though. So you might see them on the secondary market.
It is part of the regular catalog, as it were. I am just totally enamored by this watch. I think it's okay for us to occasionally be enamored by watches that we'll never get.
Or see.
This is, touch. For me, I think maybe one of the most lovely watches I've ever seen. And I'm very, very, very into it.
I wish for my next watch I had a G-Shock. just so,
Is there nothing equally?
We can go really ups and downs. the closest I can get for today is a Unimatic collaboration with Messina Lab.
Close enough.
the Messina Lab Modello Quattro U4S TSPW with a meteorite dial. And it looks really good. We're seeing some meteorite stuff as of late. It kind of maybe more than in previous years.
Pause. Have you tried the whiskey?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Oh my God.
It's super. It reminds me of Christmas. It's like mulled wine, but bourbon.
I've had this before, but when I had the neck pour when it was full. And so now it's opened up, it's breathed for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's really good.
And I don't get bourbon so much. It is like a candied rye.
Mm-hmm. It's like Christmas. This is...
Damn. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you. Keep going.
I want to put like a beer helmet on.
It's straws.
Yeah, obviously. like so you can aerate it while you're consuming it.
Oh my God.
You have to do the... The Hannibal Lecter tasting.
And the hug? Mm-hmm. It's like, this is perfect.
Yeah, this is killer.
Oh my gosh. Drinking this out of a flask, standing outside in the snow would be, I'm thinking, at a ski resort perhaps, would be fucking perfect.
Yeah. Gosh. For a lot of reasons other than just the whiskey. But that would be the icing on the ski resort.
49.3%? It's not super high proof. I mean, it's a great proof. Man.
It's a really good hug, though. It's like your like slightly chubby friend who really likes hugs. He just like gets in there and
you're talking about me.
I'm not.
yeah, this stuff is kind of hard to get. If I might try to. Be nice to have a backup bottle of this. I guess is what I'm trying to say. Back to the watch.
Utamatic. So it's got it bears a NASA logo at the 6 o'clock. It is a gray meteorite. We're seeing a lot of meteorite this year. I think more than previous years.
I think maybe meteorite's one of those like every other year things.
Yeah, it's
we get it in batches.
Yeah, it's having another moment. 40 millimeter case, titanium case, Cerakoted titanium case. Like this is just cool. This is just cool. 300 meters of water resistance. Meteorite dial, it's a Modelo Quattro, right? We know this watch. This is a watch we've talked about. They just made some cool little tweaks for their Messina Labs collaboration. And I think it's a really good collaboration. There's only 60 of them, 2,500 euros. Money. Case back has got... some space shit on it.
I do think it's a little expensive.
Yeah, I mean it's Cerakoted titanium. It's a collaboration. It's about where I would expect this to land. It is too expensive, but it's where I would expect a collaboration Cerakoted titanium watch to be from Unimatic.
Yeah, what's the movement in this?
Salida 200.
Yeah.
it's where I'd expect it to be.
Yeah, all right. Well, I mean, I think it's okay. I don't think it's terrible. But
the gray meteorite kind of looks like the moon surface, especially in contrast with the Cerakote white on the titanium.
Yeah, you know the problem is Cerakote chips. I don't know. I don't think I understand the price. In context of what we expect from Unimatic, right? The 200-1 movement, I'm struggling with it a little bit. It's a weird choice. It's a cool watch. Winmanstatten.
It looks good.
I guess I'm okay with it. You know, whatever. What to say? Do you have these ones on your list? I'm just looking. I don't think you do. Frederic Constant.
I don't have that.
AKA Freddy Con, as the kids called him back home. I don't know. That was weird. It released a watch. This has been a few years back. They're Classics Premier watches. And I think we talked about them. Sort of this Art Deco sector dial. And you know what? They were fine. They were fine. I was like, okay. I was Freddy Constant. It's not my thing. They released them on a Jubilee bracelet, and I'm instantly here for it. So what we're seeing is what are we going to call that? I'm going to say denim and...
Yeah, it looks exactly like the Levi's I'm wearing right now.
Khaki. I'm going to say denim and khaki, but I think they have different names for them.
I'm going to go like sand.
British khaki.
British khaki.
It's a little, it's not quite, it's not everyone else's khaki.
So two really, really nice dials. They say, well, they say blue or salmon pink, fine. What we've got is an FC301, which I think is a La Jouperet G100. This is a really stunning watch. And on this Jubilee with the female end link, thank you, Freddie Kahn. And this handset, like all of a sudden, Andrew, I'm like, well, now hold on. This watch is really cool.
I think everything, whenever I see FC, I expect a way higher price tag than what we get. Everything they do, their design elements, their design language looks so much higher, like upmarket than where it actually falls.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like disguised luxury. In a way that other brands don't nail.
Yeah, and these are 2,000 euro. I think $2,500 to $3,000 is what you're going to expect. 38.5 across, 10.67 thick for a sport watch. We've got 50 meters of water resistance and a big convex sapphire crystal. I think that this thing is really good. And it's all dial, right? Big convex crystal on... The whole it's all like dial,
great Art Deco fonts and kind of design language on that dial, and
oh yeah, the fonts here are money, and you think you've seen the font before, and then you get some of the numbers, and you're like, well, maybe not. I actually don't know that nine. I don't think I've ever seen that nine before.
The tail on the four is what really is like singing for me. It's almost like a spade.
It's on a the tail. Wicked font set. Yeah. I'm really, really okay with this watch,
Andrew. The ones are really good too. They almost are like a hook, like a seatbelt cutter hook.
And I don't think the anything besides the bracelet is new. But I think for me the point is that with the bracelet, this is a watch I want.
Yeah, they brought it home for sure.
Yeah. So new dial colors, bracelet, bangarang, Peter.
Is wrong with you?
I'm ready to go. Move it along.
I totally lost my train of thought. Okay.
You just have to pick one.
That's the part of the show we're at. I've picked it. The new Yema Superman Tourbillon Milesime.
Millesime?
Nah, Milesime. I know how to read. This is cool. So we now have from Yema a Tourbillon in their sport watch. And here's the real exciting part. It's exactly as much as you would expect a Tourbillon to cost. I kind of hoped that with Yema dropping an in-house Tourbillon and Yema being Yema, they were going to find a way to do it for under $5,000. Because, like, like Christopher Ward dropped a minute repeater, right? And then they did it in the affordable world. And Yema works in this affordable world. They do in-house calibers. They do really cool shit. And I was like, oh, did they just break the watch industry? No, they have a $12,000 Tourbillon, which you know, makes sense.
No, it makes no sense. It is impossible to market this well. I don't. Someone's gonna buy it, I guess.
I don't know. But yeah, but that's the thing. I don't know why Yema is doing a $12,000 watch.
No, it's fucking stupid. Nobody wants a $12,000 Yema.
That's my confusion. I thought they had just done something revolutionary.
It's cool, Yema, but nobody wants a $12,000 fucking Yema.
And all they did was make a Tourbillon and then charge you what you'd expect to pay for a Tourbillon.
Like, you know, I was looking at some used Glashütte, you know, maybe some JLC, but then I noticed Yema released a Tourbillon.
It doesn't make any sense. $12,000. It's
It's called titanium.
It's cool.
Titanium case, titanium bracelet. It's cool as shit. It's worth $12,000, but it doesn't make sense from this brand that we know and love.
It's cool. No, but I don't want it for $12,000. For $12,000, I'm like, oh no, I'm going to look at a different watch.
Yeah. Maybe a couple.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they're doing a thing here that I don't know about.
Yeah, I don't understand
there's it. There's some posturing or positioning that's going on behind the scenes that doesn't make sense to me. And if someone would just explain it to me, I'd be like, okay, that makes a lot more sense. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that's what's happening here. Because based on what I see, this is a fucking dumb ass thing to do.
It makes no sense.
What are we doing, Yema?
It makes no sense. Yema has been killing the affordable world. Absolutely slaying. And they're like, oh, we're depart. I don't get it. I don't get it. Everything about this watch is super fucking cool. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's cool.
But it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's the movement's really cool. It's really cool. For the love of watches, Yema, I got your back. Beautiful. Well done.
But that's all.
Fucking A. $12,000 Yema. Let's talk about watches that are equally unobtainium. I've got two.
I think this is obtainium, though. Expensive.
Sure.
You're not going to have to wait in line. You're not going to have a purchase history. You can probably buy one whenever you want.
No, you're right. You're right. Let's talk about a couple watches that you can't buy whenever you want. Both of these are from the watchmaker, the German watchmaker, Lange, or A Lange & Söhne. That's all wrong. Don't make fun of me, or do.
I love when we have people on who want to sound hoity-toity, and they, Lange. Shut up.
I grabbed a link that had both of these on here. These are both kind of throwaways for me, because it was really just kind of like, whoa, I love those. And then I have to move on. I just have to move on. Because there's nothing I can do. However, we had two releases from Geneva Watch Days that really caught my eye from Lange. One of those is the Richard Lange Jumping Seconds with a rose gold dial. It's got a regulator layout. I know nothing about this watch, and I've never seen it before. But it's a Jumping Seconds watch, limited to 100 pieces, with a constant force escapement and a zero reset mechanism, which means it's
something
very accurate and it ticks like a quartz watch. I don't think it's not dead beats. I think that there's a difference between jumping seconds, zero reset, and dead beats, but it ticks. Very, very accurate. Rose gold dial with black printed numerals. The layout is incredible. It's white gold. It makes me feel things in my insides.
That also manifest on the outside.
You saw that, sorry. That's embarrassing. The second one of these is an 1815 release. The Lange 1815 is a beautiful tourbillon. It is coming out in 950 platinum, which I believe is the first time an 1815 has been released in 950 platinum. Okay, it's a tourbillon. I don't actually even know what a tourbillon is. It's like an anti-gravity watch.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's 39.5 millimeters, 11.3 thick. It's fucking platinum, and it has the most beautiful black enamel grand feudal I've ever seen in my life. This thing looks like you could swim laps in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mirror polished. You know, we've got a very impressive movement, to say the least. They do talk a lot about the 72-hour power reserve, and I'm like, Hamilton H80 beat you by 8. But this thing is, I mean, I don't know anything about it. And you know how much it costs? Me either. It's a lot.
If you got to ask.
It's a lot. Yeah. But I really love this watch.
Yeah, there's something else. They're like the kind of thing that are so good. I don't know if I can truly appreciate it.
Yeah. No, I think that's me too, Andrew. It's something else.
Because as I look at them and I read the spec sheet on them, I'm like, okay, neato. That's, you know, just.
But you know what? There's a lot of watches like that for me where I look and I'm like, yeah, okay. This one like instantly like drew me in. Both of these watches. I saw both of these watches and I was like, whoa. In a way that I'm not always with like hyper expensive stuff. Like both of these watches, I saw them and I was like, yes, please.
I maybe it's like a defense mechanism that's built in that yeah. that I like am unable to.
Right. It's like as toddlers learn how to walk, they stop liking food. Did you know that?
Yeah.
This is a thing, right? So as toddlers gain the ability to walk around, they also start to reject foods that taste weird. That's why all toddlers go into a I want cheese or rice or nothing phase. It's because of this thing. Their body teaches them not to like things that they can reach now.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew is that way with expensive watches.
My body is like, no, you
nope.
Like my brain and I see it and they're like, oh, you want it.
That looks
and then my
icky.
Body's like, avoid, yucky. Divert, reject. And you're like, oh, that's fine. I like it. It's neat.
Andrew, what's next?
Okay. How about, oh, some Citizen watches. Oh, I have a funny Citizen story. I was at the Chef Supply store buying a brisket the other day. I was wearing Christopher Ward. I was wearing my C63. And that fella at the cashier, who I've never seen before, there's four people that work there, so
yeah,
I know them all. Because right down the street from my house, it's if you don't have you've never been to Chef Supply, you really do need to go because
it's also right down the street from my house.
But also, yeah, it is. It is right. Anyway, this guy who I've never talked to before, never seen before, was like, I was a little uncomfortable because I'm like, hey, I'm here all the time. Seems like you are too, but I've never seen you. I'm like, I don't really like change. I just want to go in. I know where my things are. Anyhow, I'm trying to get my debit card to work, and I just got a new debit card, and it's a touch debit card, and I'm struggling to make my card work.
You're on like their twisting it and touching it in like, different areas.
I'm like sliding it around, and it's like put in your PIN. I'm like, why do I have to put in my PIN? I just touched you. So I'm like kind of fighting with this machine, and this guy's like, ooh, interesting timepiece.
He said it like that,
and I was like, that's an interesting response. And I just take my watch off. I'm like, oh yeah, it's Christopher Ward. They're this cool British company. They do Swiss made shit. And I just hand him my watch while I'm like fucking with this machine. And I'm like fighting with it. And he's like, I don't know if you saw mine. He's wearing a Citizen ProMaster.
Oh, cool.
And I'm like, oh, baller. Okay. And he's like, yeah, it's automatic. I'm a little bit of a watch junkie. Are you familiar with LIV watches? And I was like, fuck you. Give me my watch. I finally get my card to work. And I take my watch back and I put it on. I'm like, I'm familiar. Yeah. And he's like, you know, I almost got one of them, but I just didn't want to spend the money. And I was like, oh, shut the fuck up. You're not a watch junkie. You're a weirdo.
What's an LIV?
They're like a weirdo fashion-ish brand. They're like kind of, oh, I'm trying to think of like a... They kind of have like an Aviate feel, but like tending toward like Invicta.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a better brand that I could probably percolate up to the top to compare them
sure,
to.
Sure, no, I see it though.
But
I see it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing objectively wrong with them, except that everything is objectively wrong with them. Right, they're just kind of like they're a fashion brand, kind of masquerading as a watch brand, kind of not.
Are they expensive?
I don't know. I don't.
I like how the pictures on the website are of this like 80-year-old Swiss watchmaker.
Yeah, because
like, that motherfucker has never been near an LIV watch.
Because they're like they're doing like they most of their watches, if not all, I think bear Swiss made on them. So they're like doing a thing, but also not.
Why can't I see the price? How much does this watch cost, people? It's $1,000. Okay, yeah.
They kind of remind me of like Brick, you know, where
like
it's,
they're made in the same place that Brick watches are made.
Likely, likely. So anyway,
cool.
It was an interesting story, and he was like, "Oh, I'm a watch guy." I'm like, "You're not a watch guy," which is fine. It's fine.
No, he can still be a watch guy. He's just different. I mean, that
a guy I work with is a watch guy in that he has 100 Invictas.
Yeah.
I've never seen him wear the same watch twice.
Everybody comes to the hobby in different ways. That's what I'll say.
Okay, I accept.
Yeah.
If I collect 1980s Toyota Corollas, I am not a classic car collector. I have a yard full of junk. We have a new movement in the Soyosa 60. We've got an automatic movement now, which is an excellent improvement because the Soyosa is...
The Soyosas have had the automatic. They had the 8210s in them.
Now they've got the... Ooh, what's the movement?
8310.
Yeah, the 8310. So we've got an upgraded movement.
And the 83... So if you're at home and you're like, wait, what's this? So the 8 series movements from Miyota are their slightly thicker, slightly more workhorse movements. The 8210 is the 40-hour power reserve, I believe non-hacking. The 8310 is sort of like the Seiko NH35, although it's got, so which is to say, hacking, although we do have a 60-hour power reserve. It's just a better movement. It's not Miyota's best movement, but it's better than the 8 series by a wide margin. So we've now got a 60-hour power reserve in these things.
Yep, we've got a 60-hour power reserve.
Sorry to take the...
Some new colorways. 575 for steel and black, and 625 for the two-tone or gold. The gold is kind of rosy on a blue dial.
Yeah, it's a rose gold for sure.
I'm into it. And then the two-tone green is reminiscent of some other iconic ways. But these colorways are all banging.
Yeah, good colorways. You know, I'll say one of the things that is I've not seen a lot of talk about the move from 8210 to 8310. We get they got rid of the small seconds,
mm-hmm.
So these are essential seconds, which I think is great. Yeah, I think that's great. I won't say I don't think anybody was like, man, I'd get a Soyosa if only they had a slightly longer power reserve. I just can't imagine that person exists. With that said, I was a little negative about this release when I first saw it earlier this week, and I think it's growing on me. I think having a cleaner dial,
it's a cool upgrade.
It is an improvement. And the thing about a 60-hour power reserve, I know we talked about this before when the H80 really sort of got popular, but it allows you to take your watch off on Friday afternoon and then put it back on Monday morning and have the watch still be keeping time.
Yeah, but who does that?
Well, I think a lot of people.
I think normal people do.
Normal people, yeah. Right?
We don't.
They're going to put on their G-Shock or whatever. They're going to go to bed Friday night. They're going to put on a G-Shock, and then they're going to put their watch back on Monday. This allows you to get all the way through the weekend. So That's what a 60-hour power reserve does. So I'm okay with it in that context, right? I think it's a cool upgrade. So I was negative about it at first. It's grown on me. Okay, Andrew.
Okay.
All right.
I went to a coach's orientation for soccer.
Yeah.
Earlier this week.
Yeah.
Yesterday, in fact.
And they made you do drills.
The guy.
Your son told me about this.
The guy who runs the league. Mark already told you about this. I told you. I texted you. I was like, I'm not. When did you hang out with Mark?
Yesterday, I saw him at dinner.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because I was up showering. Yeah. Like, he's upstairs showering. He'll do soccer drills for 2 hours, which is exactly what happened. So I volunteered to coach and sent the league director an email. He wears a shirt that says, "They play, you cheer, I commish." And I hate him.
Is this the big Santa Claus guy?
Yeah, the guy who looks like the dude.
He looks like Santa Claus.
I think he looks more like the dude. But anyway, that's the shirt he wears. He sends me this email. He's like, okay, yeah, I know it's short notice, but Sunday, if you come to the Monroe Middle School at 3, we have coaches orientation. I was like, okay, fine. And I show up, and there's a few other people there, and he lumbers out of his truck and sits down on the tailgate, and is like, ah, I probably should have mentioned you need to dress for the occasion. We're going to be doing drills. I was like, I didn't even bring sunblock, dude. I like, you should have at least warned me that this was outside. So I did soccer drills for an hour and a half, and it was just infuriating. But one of the women there who's coaching another team was wearing one of the 34mm day chests.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was baller.
Who was it?
Fuck. I don't remember her name.
Was it Kate?
No. It's a long name.
Okay.
It's like three syllables. I remember that.
I don't think you have this on your list, and I want to talk about this one. Just double check. Okay. Ferlin Mari?
Oh, yeah. I don't usually put them on my list because whenever I see them, I'm just kind of like, meh.
So last year, Ferlin Mari reviewed or released a Disco Volante Onyx. And they've released it now with diamonds.
Diamond, I believe.
And I gotta tell you, I'm really, really into this watch. So the Disco Volante, I think, is 38 millimeters. This is very much a 1930s
style.
It's a lugless case, which is to say the bracelet connects on the back of the case in a recess. So mm-hmm. the strap on the bracelet connects traditionally, but sucked into the case, so there's no lugs.
What could be confused for like hooded lugs if there was any lugs on the watch.
Correct. And when I say traditionally, also kind of traditionally. This watch has Piso 7001, which is a very thin, cool movement from ETA that allows them to get these watches really thin. And this watch is thin, under 10 millimeters. And it's just weird and gorgeous and surprisingly not $1 billion.
Are these are the markers baguette diamonds? Is that what I'm looking
at? And the markers are lab-grown baguette diamonds. Isn't this thing fucking cool?
It is. And I...
Under 9 millimeters, sorry. 8.95. The author of this article that I've linked to, Meg Tochi, who I think it's Tochi, it might be Toki, who writes for Worn and Wound, says, I like this phrase. She says, if meltiness were a metric that we would evaluate watches on, I would call this watch melty. I can't remember exactly what she says, but meltiness. If meltiness was a metric by which we could measure watch fit, the Ferlin Mari Disco Volante line would receive top marks. That's what she says. It fades beautifully into the wrist.
It's a gorgeous watch. It looks like a $10,000 watch.
And the side profile. Yeah. I think that's the thing, right? So you get a watch that looks expensive. You get a watch that's got like a little bit of next level fanciness. And these baguette diamonds aren't tacky at all. Mm-mm. Like the way they present is very, very. And then you get a watch that's weird and kind of interesting. 3,500 francs, so probably $5,000 on this.
No, like just a little over four, I think.
Okay.
The printing on the dial makes it almost look enamel.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it isn't an enamel dial, isn't
it? Is it?
I think so, yeah. Let's see. And also, it comes with this mesh strap. It's like a braided mesh. It's not like your traditional chain link mesh. This looks like a a Perlon.
Yeah.
Perlon, but it's braided steel. Yeah. This thing is a sleeper. You're a sleeper, Ferlin Mari Disco Volante Onyx Diamonds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stone dial. So it's onyx. It's actual onyx, which is how they're achieving that nearly enamel look. It's a polished stone.
Yeah, this thing is cool.
It's cool. They nailed it.
This thing is really, really, really pretty. Full polish, obviously, on this thing. Sort of a stacked architectural UFO case. I love it. This is small seconds.
Yeah, they nail it.
Beautiful watch. Sleeper.
We're talking a lot about vintage watches, vintage inspired watches today.
What's next?
What are we at?
You know, we're at an hour flat, so I think we probably talk about that one and maybe that one.
Oh, that one.
I'm not pointing or anything. I'm just saying that one as if
you know, we do communicate telepathically pretty regularly.
Don't talk about that one because it's stupid.
Tag Heuer.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna get it right.
Carrera Astronomer, a new SKU for Tag Heuer. Who saw that coming? So we'll start with
who saw that coming?
A 39 millimeter case, 45 lug to lug, great dimensions on it, 12.6 thick or 12.16 thick. It's the Tag Heuer caliber 7 movement, 100 meters of water resistance. Coming in under $5,000. Okay, so now the watches. These are fascinating, and I still don't super know how to feel about them. So this watch is all dial, and 40% of it is moon phases, dates, moon, like it's all astrological.
Yeah.
Subdial. That it has, what were all the functions in this thing? Let me find them.
The astronomer introduces a rotating disc
that
shows 7 lunar stages across the full 29.5 day cycle. Pointers on a recessed disc track daily movement, and the disc advances each night at 1 a.m., staying in rhythm with the Earth's satellite above.
So it's a super advanced moon phase tracking watch.
It's like a scientific moon phase display.
Yes. And I think I don't dig it.
Really?
Any but one of the colorways. So this white kind of silver dial with the gray subdial and the green accented loom on the moon.
I think they're calling that turquoise.
Yeah, I accept it as turquoise.
It doesn't look turquoise to me.
It is fire.
Yeah.
I am smitten by this colorway. I don't understand the complication. I don't understand exactly how to read it. And I frankly don't care. I dig this. This is a really cool Tag Heuer release that's inconsistent with a lot of Tag Heuer releases that are like inspired by their previous catalog, their iterative releases on their current catalog. This is a truly new SKU, a new complication, and is really fucking cool.
Yeah, so a couple question marks for me. One, they're saying this is the Tag Heuer Carrera Astronomer, which, fine, I'm okay. Yeah. I don't mind, but, and it's a Carrera case, I guess, but it just doesn't feel like a Carrera. It's gorgeous. I like all of these. At first I was like, oh, I like this one. No, I think I like this one. They've got an actual two-tone. The two-tone is actual gold, rose gold. It's got like a rose gold rehot and or a rose gold minute track and a rose gold center link on the bracelet.
Yeah, the center on the seven link is rose gold, and that's a really well done two tone.
Yeah, it's bracelet. Fucking rad. I'm bad about it. These are all really cool. I just think these are interesting and weird and fucking neat. Well done, Tag Heuer.
Yeah, who saw? I mean, honestly, who sees something like this coming from Tag Heuer?
And it doesn't even win the coolest complication of the week.
No,
that is reserved for Oris. Oris. Not a brand I think of complications. I don't associate Oris with complications.
No, I associate them with big pointers.
And yet.
And a dude that I hate.
The article I read about this kept making statements that were like, it's back, you'll recognize. I don't know anything about this, but apparently Oris in the past has had a caliber 113, which is its business calendar caliber. So they're saying it's back. Okay, well, I didn't know about it before. So for me, it's new. But for you, it may be back. Do you know what a business calendar caliber is?
No.
No. No, me either.
No.
Me either. But...
It sounds novel.
Actually wind up getting here is a 10-day movement that displays the power reserve. It's a manually winding 10-day movement. Now we give
That's a lot.
We give shit to power reserves. But in this context
for a manual winding,
winding 10-day.
I accept a power reserve indicator also a manual watch.
Me too. You've got a day complication. You've got small seconds. And because you have small seconds, you also have a pointer. It's a 52-week pointer date. So it's an arrow that points to one of 52 lines that reference a month and week. So it'll tell you it's the first week of January, second week of January.
No, so it's almost like a Julian date calendar.
And then you also have a date at the 6 o'clock in the traditional positioning.
I don't know who that's for.
I don't know, but I want it. It's for me. Or I want it.
The value of that complication.
Stop it. This is cool. Holy crap. No, I'm into it, dude.
I'm not against it. I don't understand the functionality of that complication.
So did you see the movement?
Yeah.
So it's a hand wind movement, but it almost looks like a micro rotor, but it's not. It's just got the biggest mainspring you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which is how they get 240 hours. It's not cheap. 8,100. Now you think, oh, a business calendar caliber. This thing is going to be very stoic. No.
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 You, Studio Underdog had a hand in this.
You'd be wrong. It is, what are we going to call that green? Seafoam?
Watermelon. It's a watermelon.
I don't think this is a
little
watermelon.
It's a little mossy.
And a little mauve-y.
Yeah.
It's really, really neat.
The red is like tending toward purple.
It looks like a chronograph, but it's not. It's like, oh, there's no pushers. That's because you've got... Because
you don't need them.
3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 3 o'clock being your small seconds, 9 o'clock being your power reserve. This thing's wild, dude.
It is. The green is really cool. It's like textured, but not. It's...
You've got like color match day and date. It's a day date. And where they put the day...
It's a weekday date.
Where they put the day is right under the Oris logo at 12. It's like this weird cutout. Like everything about this is fucking weird. And I, you know me, I love weird. Like give me something that's weird. I want something that people are like, the fuck is going on with your watch?
This is not what I would expect out of Oris. It makes sense, but I would have never seen it coming.
So, I do have to say, this is a 43 millimeter watch and it's 13 and a half thick, which I think, like, chills you out, gotta chill you out just a little bit, right? It's huge. It's a big motherfucker.
Well, it tells you the week of the year. Yeah. That takes a lot of space. There's 52 of them.
This is weird, dude. I love it.
That's a funny complication.
It's so weird.
I don't. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the functionality.
I just, you know, a lot of times I see weird and I'm like, no. But here I see weird and I'm like,
it's well executed weird.
Yes.
It's like it's reined in. And like really controlled weird.
And also fucking way too big.
Yeah. But worse is big.
No, this is like the biggest watch they make, I think. 43 millimeters.
I feel like all Oris is big. It's something.
And it's all dial. It's 43 millimeters and it's all dial.
Yeah, it has like a millimeter wide bezel.
This is like one of those.
And it's just to hold the crystal in place.
Big ass Japanese watches. And it's fucking green. Like seafoam green with.
The saturation of that green is really, really good.
And of the red. Okay. That's all I have to say about that. There theoretically one or two more watches we could talk about, Andrew.
I don't care. I don't care enough about any of these.
Okay. So let's just quickly. Zenith released a watch with USM, which is a Swiss furniture maker who in the 60s released a modular sort of furniture office shelving system that is popular, although I think outside of Europe, not super well known. Zenith and USM got together and released a watch that could have existed had Zenith and USM hooked up in the 60s, which is to say it's a chronograph. It's a El Primero-based vintage Defy that comes in USM colors, which is like this primary red, yellow, blue, and a green, and on a ladder bracelet.
I hate ladder bracelets.
It's weird and wild and really, really fun. These are expensive. They come in a cool case. And I have nothing bad to say about them, but
it looks super like 1960s Japanese.
It's supposed to be 60s, right? These are 11,000 El Primero USM colored chronographs. So cool. And then outside of that, I think the only other thing that we need to mention is that Hanhart has released the HD12, which I believe is the best iteration of this style of watch, which is to say the Hamilton Merv. They released the HD12 in a matte purple. They're calling it silk purple, and it looks terrific.
It does look good.
So if you don't know about the HD12, that is Hanhart's competition to the Hamilton Merv, which is actually evocative of all sorts of Hanhart IP from back in the day. And it's got a hardened case and an invisible PVD coated bracelet so that it's virtually unscratchable. And it's affordable if you can find one. Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Ooh, I have another thing. A couple weeks ago, I went on a bag journey to find a new backpack. It initially started, I was looking for a backpack for my 10-year-old because he like blows out superhero, Target and Walmart special backpacks. He just destroys them.
Yeah.
And he's 10, so it's like, he probably, like, he could just do with a quality bag that he's going to have, like, it's going to be what he uses for overnight trips and what he takes to school, like, in just his backpack.
Sure.
Right? So I dove into the rabbit hole, and I'm like, I want to get him, like, a proper bag. I ended up settling on a Cotopaxi 24-liter bag, and it's perfect for him. But because I was in the rabbit hole, I started looking for a backpack for me because everyone needs more backpacks. yes. And I
I need you to explain this to my wife.
As you all well know, I'm a big Mystery Ranch fangirl. But I wanted a backpack that wasn't super tactical, like that wasn't just overtly tactical, right? I don't want Molly on the outside. I don't want webbing on the outside. I want it to be something that you could look at and see and not be like, oh, bro. Like you don't expect to see a grunt style t-shirt on my front when you get around me.
True.
Which is a little bit hard to achieve with Mystery Ranch because they make, you know, generally tactical bags. So I wanted to find something kind of in the in-between zone, right? Where it's like it could serve that purpose, but that's not what it's designed to do.
Sure.
I settled on the Catalyst 26, and the Catalyst line has a handful of sizes. I think they have an 18, a 22, and a 26. So this is a Y zipper construction. So the front or the back, the outside of the bag has a vertical zipper down the entirety of it. And then two meeting zippers on the top. So you can open this bag up very much like a Venus flytrap. It just totally opens up. Or like the egg spores in Alien where it just opens and releases the thing. Against your back, it has an organization panel with some elastic straps, a couple like drop-in pockets, some mesh pockets on the inside, a laptop bag or laptop sleeve right against your body that floats. So it's like 2 inches off the bottom of the bag. So when you put it down, the edge of your laptop isn't on the earth. And I am smitten. It's great Cordura construction. And it hits that that good middle zone where if I'm wearing this just with like shorts and a t-shirt, no one is going to look at me and be like, oh, that guy, that's a tactical bag. It could very be easily just taken for a... It
doesn't feel tactical.
An outdoor, like just an outdoor bag.
Yeah, it doesn't feel tactical.
Size, the 26 liters, is perfect for like a day pack. It's perfect for like just the shit that you need to bring places. And I absolutely love it. One of the reasons I pulled the trigger on it sort of immediately is because I was, during my research... We talked about, you know, 2 years ago, a year ago, when Yeti acquired Mystery Ranch. There's some rumblings that Mystery Ranch will not continue to produce bags under the Mystery Ranch logo at the end of this year, except for their military and firefighter lines. Everything is kind of migrating toward under the Yeti logo. So... I wanted to get it while it still said Mystery Ranch and not Yeti.
Yeah. Well, it's a great backpack.
It's a very good backpack.
I'm jealous.
You can get one.
I could. Probably won't.
They were on sale on Amazon the other day for $130. I got mine on GovX. It's the first time I've bought anything off GovX.
I'll have to try that out. I need to get it. I need to get my veterans card.
I don't have one.
I need to get one. Try to spend a bunch of money at Yelp. I tried to spend a bunch of money at Lowe's the other day. And in fact, I did spend a bunch of money at Lowe's the other day. And they like gave me grief about my veteran discount. And I was like, man, I've been in your system for years. You zap my identification. You zap my driver's license. Like, what's going on here? I'm like, well, you're not in the system the right way.
Oh, you got to register online. Yeah, they did.
But I've already done that. I did that years ago.
And then you put your phone number in and click veteran.
Yeah. I've never had an issue. But the other day, they gave me grief about it. And I was like, why you wait till I spend $1,000? The reason I spent a bunch of money is because I have another thing, Andrew.
Oh, do me.
I bought a Kamado grill this week. You know, I've been sort of like reluctant to get into smokers, and I'll tell you why. I finally figured out what I was struggling with. The problem with smokers is
that it's like so many things in life, like fishing poles, right? Like I want to go buy a single fishing pole and have it work for everything. But the reality is there's just no such thing.
Yeah, there's no such thing of anything.
And that's also true with smokers. And so I've really been like reluctant to get a tool that's only going to work for some of what I want to do. Anyway.
And smokers are expensive. They take up a ton of space.
That's right. That's right.
And you don't have a back patio really conducive to a bunch of cooking implements.
So I finally figured out what I was going to get. And what I was going to get was a Weber Smoky Mountain kettle grill. And
which are great.
Which are great. And as I started that process, I kept getting pushed towards Kamado Joe and Big Green Egg. Mm-hmm. And eventually I was like, you know what? This is what I need to do. I need to bite the bullet, spend a little bit more money because it's more money. Mm-hmm. And get
because a kettle's $30.
More than that, right? So a Weber Smoky Mountain is, I want to say they're like $500, $450 new. But what I did wind up getting, I got the classic, which is to say the 18-inch Kamado Joe. I spent about $800 on it, and I've used it once, but it was exactly as easy to use as I was led to believe, mm-hmm. which is just wonderful. Now, I know a lot of people get these offset smokers and really struggle with them.
They're hard.
And then they wind up not using them. And that would be me. I really needed something that I was going to be able, that was going to be intuitive to use. I was going to be able to figure out, and I was going to be able to, I just needed something kind of low learning curve. And I made chicken and smoked hatch chilies on this thing last night, Andrew. I used very little charcoal. It uses lump charcoal. I used very little lump charcoal, probably about $2 worth of charcoal. I made phenomenal chicken and hatch chilies, and it was easy. It didn't take me all that long. I mean, you know, getting it heated up and then an hour cook, I think like for just pure cooking, I was probably about 2 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Which tracks. That's about right.
Yeah, when you're having to build a fire, tend a fire, like get the fire right. That's right. That's an hour of work.
But, you know, the beauty of a Kamado grill is because of the ceramic, your temperature is really stable, which is nice. You know, I'm not having to do a whole lot. Once you get the temperature where you want it and you get your airflow right, temperature is where it's going to be, right? Mm-hmm. You might need to open it up or a little bit, you know, because you've lost 5 degrees, but you go real slow. You make slow movements.
Yeah, that's the key when you're dealing with airflow controlled temperature is understanding like which to adjust where to really influence your temperature. So I had an offset smoker for a long time, and for a long time everything I did was over wood. I did like all wood smoking, and I went away from it because I'm lazy, and I can get similar results easier with something else, but. Once you learn to control your airflow, it's nailed it.
And I know a lot of people would have gone Traeger and making the same decision I made. And honestly, I was looking at it's close, right? Like maybe I'll go that direction. Maybe I'll go Traeger. Eventually, I got to a place where I was like, no, I don't want pellets. I like the idea of lump charcoal. And here we are. I've got a Kamado Joe in my backyard.
There's something really nice about a grill that doesn't require electricity.
Yeah, it's really cool. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Because if I lose power, I've lost one of my.
You can come over and use my Kamado.
I'll just use a Blackstone if I'm out of power.
But. I did tell Kim. I was like, you got to learn how to light this thing because Kim works from home, right?
Yeah, you could get her starting your fire an hour before you get home.
That's right. If she can,
if she can just get the fire started, she doesn't even have to get the temperature right. Just get the fire burning.
Yeah, that's what I told her. I mean, depending on what temperature we're going for, that works if we're going for like 350 or 400. But if we're going for like a slow and low, you got to be careful you don't like let it get too hot. So I cooked yesterday at 300 degrees, mm-hmm. 285. And eventually got up to 300 because when I took all the chicken off, I got some airflow. And so it got up to 300. I stopped. We ate at 6:30, Andrew. At 11:30, it was 250.
Oh, yeah. They hold heat.
And I shut it off. I mean, I completely closed it up. Mm-hmm. And it was still 250. So they hold. I mean, trying to lose temperature on those things. I think you can put like a bowl of water in it to try to lose temperature. But they hold temperature for forever. Well,
there's no need to. Let it just let it cool down naturally.
No, for sure. But if you're in the middle of a cook, I guess is what I'm saying.
Oh.
If you're in the middle of a cook and you get too hot, you're in trouble.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, you got to be careful to get. You got to be careful not to get ahead of yourself.
That or get too much airflow, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to be that. You know, so they say sneak up on your temperature, yada yada yada. Anyways, tricks. But so yeah. I do want Kim to be able to know how to light it so that I can cook, but I'm worried she'll be like, well, when it's done, I'm like, well, now it's 700 degrees, and so we're having pizza or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You can flash see or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we'll figure it out. Anyway.
Like a fire-kissed carpaccio or something.
That's all I got, man.
It's a good other thing.
Andrew, anything you want to add before we go?
No, I don't want to make any more notes.
Hey, folks, you at home in your car. Hey, thanks for joining us for this episode 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, go to our website. It's watchclicker.com on the World Wide Web. That's where we post articles and pictures and other things about watches. You can also follow us on social media at WatchClicker or at 40and20_WatchClicker. Now, this is the important part. If you want to support us, and we're getting to the place where we need your money, you do that at patreon.com/40and20. You don't have to give a lot. A little tiny bit will help us go. But we're almost, but not quite upside down. So 40and20, patreon.com/40and20. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday Don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.